Today's guest, Monica Crowley, has had a front row seat to media, politics, and foreign affairs spanning generations, and serving under two presidents, Richard Nixon and Donald Trump. Crowley's books on Nixon made her a New York Times bestselling author, her popular show, The Monica Crowley Podcast, a destination for Republican influencers, and her views on everything from immigration to the White House are widely followed as a columnist, TV analyst, and political interpreter. Borrowing from the classic E.F. Hutton theme, when Monica Crowley talks, people listen. From Ballarat Studios in Florida, it's 13th and Park.
We give you information, not a panic attack.
I mean, look what's going on. I mean, my God.
This was it. My kids were gonna die.
That time is gone forever.
This is the biggest story in America.
We weren't prepared for this.
Don't you want to speak truth to power?
Toughest thing I ever had to do.
So, Monica, I have to start this way. You're kind of the classic underachiever, right? Fox News, MSNBC, served under two presidents. You've been in the movies. You've been on the Colbert Show, Bill Maher. What do you do for your next act? I mean, I want to know where you go from here.
Well, thank you. First of all, it's very kind of you to say. When I look back over the scope of my professional career, it has had a lot of really interesting and incredible mountaintops, some valleys too, like everybody else. But I think, you know, I'm always looking for the next adventure. And I love media. So obviously, I'm going to continue with the Monica Crowley podcast, which I hope everyone will check out. And television, radio, writing columns, I love that. Those are passion projects for me whenever I appear or write or opine about anything, because my main passion is saving the United States of America before it's really too late.
Well, before we move to 24 and maybe 25, let's go back in history for a second. I'll call this your start. You were already going about 95 miles an hour before you hit this mark when you served as an assistant under former President Richard Nixon, an intern, I think, initially, and then an assistant. What was Richard Nixon like? What was he really like? I mean, we have all read the books, many of your books, best-selling, by the way, New York Times. What was he like, and why did it really leave such an impression on you that when I saw a clip when you were addressing, I think it was the Richard Nixon Library, you were moved to tears?
You know, when I started working for President Nixon, it was the last 4 years of his life, so early to mid-1990s, and it was my very first job. So I was not born when he was elected president. I did work with him as a very, very young woman, starting at the age of 21, 22. So that in and of itself made that experience absolutely extraordinary. And I brought a very young person's eyes to an absolute political legend who had changed the entire trajectory of the world. And so to be able to work with him, and of course, the job itself began as a Cinderella story, because I was a college kid with no money, no contacts, no nothing, read one of his books, which blew me away. And I sat down and I wrote the man a letter, forgot about it. And about a month later, I went to my mom's mailbox where I was living, because it was summer vacation from college, and there was a handwritten note from Richard Nixon to me. And that letter and that note from him changed my life. What was he like? You know, I have to say, that is the question I get most often. Not what is Donald Trump like? What was Richard Nixon like? Because in many ways, he remains something of an enigma. Because of his tremendous influence on America and global events, I get that question a lot. And I can tell you that the Richard Nixon I knew was far more complex than the one-dimensional caricature that is put out by historians, by the imperial media, by popular culture of, you know, sort of a paranoid, dark, brooding kind of character. He was not that at all, and far more complicated, like we all are, right? Richard Nixon was brilliant, which even his detractors will concede, a true intellectual. He was generous. He was kind. He was very giving. He was a loving father and a doting grandfather. He was a visionary in the sense that he was one of the few American presidents who could actually see what the world was going to look like 20, 30, 40 years down the road, and then have the foresight and political will to make American policy in that moment to anticipate that world. And he was also very funny, which, you know, not a lot of people saw. He didn't really show that side of himself, but he was very funny with a lot of self-effacing humor as well. He was not just a great man, he was a good man.
So I remember, of course, the breakthrough with Henry Kissinger, the outreach to China that opened up a whole nother world. I also remember the turbulence that the country was going through in 1968 as he was campaigning and ultimately came into power. I don't want to equate today to then, but there is a lot of restlessness, I think, in the country. I think law and order is still a majorly concern for a lot of people, public safety. What lessons do you think, Monica, would Richard Nixon have for us today that are still as valid as they were when he was president of the United States?
Well, Nixon loved this country body and soul, and that was one of the great ironies. You know, he liked Donald Trump, and there are a lot of similarities there too. They both went into it for the right reasons, which is serving the American people, making sure the American taxpayer was taken care of, and also advancing America first, America's interests around the world, to try to move the world to greater peace and prosperity. They genuinely came into office with those objectives in mind, unlike so many others. But that put them square in the crosshairs of the Uniparty, the regime, the deep state, the globalist deep state, that saw the two of them as existential threats to their absolute grips on power. So I think Nixon today would be taking a look at where the country is domestically, but also internationally, and saying, wait a minute. First of all, we allowed this to happen to ourselves over many decades because those of us good Americans who are on the side of light and America first, we're busy raising our families and starting small businesses and going to church and working in our communities to be paying close attention over the last several decades about what the left was doing to fundamentally transform this nation. So Nixon, I think in this moment, I think he would have recognized it long before this moment. But right now, if he were with us today, he'd be saying, we need a radical disruptor. I think he would be 1,000% behind Donald Trump. In fact, he famously wrote Trump a letter in 1988 saying that Mrs. Nixon saw him on the Phil Donahue show and he was amazing. And if he ever saw public office, he would win. So he would be behind him 1,000%. He'd be raising money for him. He'd be advising him on policy, both foreign and domestic, because he would understand that the moment is so late. The hour is so late in this country and the moment is so desperate that you need an outsider like Nixon, like Trump, to get in there and start smashing the entire corrupt status quo into a million pieces.
So these scenes, these pictures are playing out every day across America, and it's no longer a border state issue. It's an American issue. There's almost a comparative between two former presidents now, Donald Trump and Bill Clinton. And Bill Clinton, a Democrat, when he was president, he really fought hard to increase funding for Border Patrol. He thought the problem of illegal immigration was daunting and needed to be taken care of. And he was applauded for that. The same way that Donald Trump, when he came into office, for similar reasons, said, we've got to get control.
You know, we talk about previous presidents and, you know, you mentioned Bill Clinton in the 1990s, but even as recently as Barack Obama and Joe Biden, when he was in the Senate and vice president, taking very strong stands on the need for an enforced border and an illegal immigration set of policies in this country that has it under control. Because even as recently as like 2008 and 09 with Barack Obama, there was this consensus that you essentially have no country if you don't have enforced borders. Right now, what everybody needs to understand is that the reason you have seen the shift from those pretty hardcore positions on immigration from Obama and Biden and Bill Clinton to where we are now under President Biden is that the agenda for the left has shifted.
You served under Donald Trump in the United States Treasury. You talked a lot about the economy.
this government, particularly under Joe Biden, with the wide open border, the chaos in our cities, this kind of wasteful spending, foreign wars that we have no business being involved in Eastern Europe and elsewhere, we are paying to fund our own destruction, and very few things outrage me more than that.
I think everyone's concerned about the national debt and how we're drowning in obligations to China and others. How do we tell government, we the people, that there's a line we have to draw at some point and not cross?
Politicians will only respond to public pressure. So if one email comes into their office about the national debt, they'll look at it, but then they might blow it off. But there's power in numbers. So everybody listening to the show, everybody who listens to my show, where I talk about this all the time, we need to mobilize in great numbers, putting tremendous political pressure on our elected representatives, whether they're Democrats, independents, or Republicans, to begin to stop the spending. We cannot go on like this. We're closing in on $35 trillion in the national debt. We are now running annual deficits at these spending levels of $2 trillion. I remember when $1 trillion was considered out of control and unsustainable. Now it's $2 trillion a year in the spending. We cannot go on like this. Reform is going to have to happen in the mandatory spending programs like Social Security and Medicare. That doesn't mean shut those programs down. I don't mean to scare anybody. And Trump has talked about those programs are untouchable. But there has to be some restructuring of those programs because they're also eating up such a huge part of the budget. And we cannot go on like this at these levels with the discretionary and the mandatory spending and sending hundreds of billions of dollars to places like Ukraine, getting no return on that investment whatsoever. So the next president, and I think Donald Trump is going to be the lucky ticket holder, they are going to deal with an economic crisis of epic proportions that's going to make the Great Depression look like a walk in the park.
So I'd love to hear your thoughts on the 24 campaign and where it's going. And heaven knows, ultimately, all the pieces of it, but the Democratic playbook is obvious. Democratic playbook includes abortion, democracies in peril, and Donald Trump. But you have another character that's entered the fray that's going to have some impact, I think. It's Robert Kennedy Jr., who already took on President Biden just the other day.
When people talk about the threat to democracy that Trump poses, do you really think that is it equal to Biden?
I mean, listen, I can make the argument that President Biden is a much worse threat to democracy.
You talk about a threat to democracy, sir. You are that. Mm-hmm. So that maybe is no longer a clean play for Democrats, which leads me to this question. You saw what happened recently in Florida. The 6-week abortion ban has been approved by the Supreme Court. Do you think abortion for Republicans is an issue, maybe a breaking issue against them among independents and others?
Well, I think they are so desperate because they certainly can't run on their record. They can't run on Biden's record. He has been in a historic catastrophe. So they can't run on Bidenomics because you've got sky high inflation, sky high gas prices, cost of living crisis in this country. Can't run on immigration with a wide open border and all the chaos that that's brought, or on global peace, because now you have two raging hot wars and maybe a third one with China and Taiwan beginning to heat up. Can't run on that either. So the only thing that they are grasping at is trying to make it a referendum on Donald Trump, turning him into a boogeyman all over again. And to your point, abortion, to try to scare enough women into mobilizing and coming out in huge numbers to try to counter this big red America First tsunami that they know is coming at them. Look, I think abortion is such an emotional issue and such a sensitive one for a lot of people that it could mobilize a significant number of women and men for that matter. But is it enough to tilt the election, particularly in swing states? I don't think so. And the evidence here is that when you look at poll after poll, asking the American people about the top issues for them, what is going to guide their vote going into November, abortion is way down the list. I think I saw a recent Gallup poll that had it at number 10 down the list. And of course, the top ones are illegal immigration and the wide open border, the broader economy, inflation, gas prices, jobs, all of the things that directly affect their lives on a daily basis. The things that, you know, are not luxuries. These are things that you need to do to stay upright in your life, right? Food costs, gasoline costs, heating your apartment, meeting your mortgage, or renting an apartment. Those kinds of basic life things are getting crushed under Biden. And so those issues are way in front of abortion. So Democrats can try. They might have some success with it on the margins, but overall, no, it's not going to work for them.
Isn't this like 2016 all over again? When Donald Trump was discounted by everybody, I wasn't one of them, by the way, and I'm looking at the economy, the real economy, not the macroeconomics, the microeconomics. This is called family budgets, right? And people were getting squeezed. Prices were going up faster than wages, and they were starting to hurt. That's, I think, was the secret, part of the secret sauce that propelled Donald Trump to the presidency. In 24, aren't we experiencing very much the same thing, or an even greater number of Americans?
Yeah, there's big 2016 energy out there. And the difference now is that Donald Trump actually has a record, and he's got a record of tremendous success that he can run on. You know, when he ran in 2016, he was an untested political commodity, but he spoke to the forgotten men and women in this country. You know, the people who have been really left behind by the push for globalism and the export of manufacturing and all of their jobs overseas, especially to China. So their lives and livelihoods had been decimated, their communities had been destroyed, and the country itself was on the back heel. Trump came in and said to them, "I see you, I hear you, and I will be your champion." That was an incredibly powerful emotional appeal. And they took a leap of faith and elected him. And man, did he deliver for them. He delivered a booming economy through a set of pro-growth economic policies. He delivered an enforced border. He delivered law and order. And he delivered world peace. So now all he has to do is say, "This is what I gave you the first time around. You know what I can do." Now we have back-to-back presidencies to compare. It is a hard comparison, and it harkens back to Reagan. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? The resounding answer is no. And so I think we're going to see a 2016 victory all over again.
There's a lot to be discouraged about in terms of now, tomorrow, the future. What message do you have for the American people that can make them get out of bed tomorrow morning feeling just a little bit more confident that something better is on the way?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I pride myself on being a happy warrior. Reagan used that phrase, but it didn't originate with Reagan. But I actually used that phrase in the subtitle of my last book, The Happy Warrior's Guide to the Great American Comeback, because I think a sense of optimism is so critical, not just in your individual life, but in the life of America. America has always been naturally an optimistic country, because we've had all these things, individual freedom, free market enterprise, that has made us the greatest nation on the face of the earth. That is not gone. I mean, yes, the hour is very late, and the left has been at this, chipping away at this country now for almost a century, which is why now we are at the tipping point. But the silver lining for this, and this is where I get my own sense of optimism, is that more and more people are awake now. You know, when tragedies happen and people often say, you know, why would God allow this to happen? Well, my belief is that God allows tragedies and allows you or nations to hit rock bottom to wake you up, to bring you back to God, back to faith, the faith of the nation. As a nation, I think we need to get back to faith. But I think he's allowed this nadir to happen, to wake more and more people up, bring us back to a sense of faith, but also a sense of that this is a spiritual battle. This is so much bigger than just Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, or right versus left, or deep state versus America First. this is so much bigger than that. And more people now are aware of it. And they're waking up and you're seeing it across the board. I mean, there is a tremendous political realignment happening. Started in 2016. Donald Trump is leading it, of course, but in many ways, he's a symptom of it. And now, particularly because of the wide open border and the tsunami of illegal immigration, decimating communities like New York, like Chicago, like Detroit, you have traditional Democrat voters in droves screaming at their Democratic mayors and saying, you know what? I've had enough of this. I'm going to take another look at Donald Trump. I'm going to take another look at the right. I'm going to take another look at Republicans. I don't know how this is going to shake out in November, but what I can sense is something percolating right under the surface that is going to be explosive in the best possible way.
I think desperation sometimes breeds determination, and I think that's where America is moving. They're determined. I want to thank you for being on the show. We encourage you to continue on and to try to help America rediscover what it is that makes us so special and so strong.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. God bless.
Remember to subscribe today and hit the bell so you never miss another episode of the show with that trademark opener from Washington, D.C. It's 13th and Park.